This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
Hello and welcome to this RNIB Connect Radio Metro Blind Sport 50th Golden Anniversary Celebration. On Friday the 21st of April 2023, Metro Blind Sport celebrated their 50th Golden Anniversary with a dinner at Queen's Club in London. So I thought it would be a good time to have a look back over the history of Metro Blind Sport, some of the club's achievements over the years, and how sport and being a member of Metro has helped blind and partially sighted people both within sport and outside sport. I'm delighted to say that joining me now to tell the story of Metro Blind Sport are 2019 RNIB Lifetime Achievement Award winner Mike Brace, CBEDL, who was one of the three founding members of Metro, a decorated Paralympian and part of the committee behind the very successful London 2012 Olympic and Paralympic Games. We also have Roy Smith, MBE, another decorated Paralympian, chair of Metro for 30 years and also their first chief executive, along with Odette Batterall, a Metro member and one of the very first visually impaired, blind, or should I say sound, tennis coaches here in the UK, who has worked within the VI sector for a number of years. Welcome to RNIB Connect Radio, Odette, Roy and Mike.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Hello, Toby. It's Roy. Thank you very much for the invitation.
And Mike here. Brilliant to be here with two old friends.
Of course, we're going to talk a lot about the history, setup, development and achievements of Metro Blind Sport. But before we do so, I wanted to ask you all to maybe give me a bit of a snapshot of what sport was like for you as a child, how accessible it may have been, how easy it may have been or may not have been to take up sport as a visually impaired person. Mike, may I start with you, please?
Yeah, mine was a bit of a mixed bread. I didn't lose my sight till I was 10, and I was a very sporty 10-year-old. So I played football and cricket and did athletics for my school team and everything else, and then went to a special school for the vision impaired. And I thought probably that was it. I wouldn't be able to do any sport. And the first day I was there, I got knocked down by a blind guy on a go-kart, followed then by someone knocking me down on roller skates. And I just thought, wow. And gradually then started to use some of the skills that I got from football and cricket and adapting those to blind cricket and blind football with the ball bearings in the ball, etc. So for me, it was a saviour. It really did make me feel as though I could look at what I could still do and not think about what I couldn't still do. So sport was almost a saviour for me.
And for you, Roy?
I was married with a 9-month-old son when I lost my eyesight at 21. And really, for the first year or two, was convinced everything could stop. Transport, I couldn't drive, I couldn't do any sport, couldn't watch sport. Found it really, really frustrating and a very, very difficult part of my life. Until I found Metro, and then really things started to slot in, how the adaption of sound ball, the way the rules were played, the people that played it, and it opened so many avenues from cross-country skiing to cricket to guide running for marathons. It enormous. It was just became there's nothing I couldn't do then. I could race tandems, all the things I thought I couldn't do, I started to be able to do and enjoy and have fun at a social level and an international level.
Odette, I know you only started to lose your sight later on in life, but when you were growing up, was sport something that you got involved in as a young person?
Well, as a young person, I did a lot of dancing because I love dancing. So I did the ballet. Also, my mum had horses, so I used to ride horses. And we lived in south of France, which meant we were quite close to the Alps and the ski slopes. So I did downhill skiing. And I must say that when I started to lose my sight, I thought that was it. A bit like Roy, I wouldn't be able to do anything anymore. But I was very active and I've always enjoyed moving around in a sense.
Mike, how did Metro Blind Sport start up? As I think the idea for a sporting club for visually impaired came out of maybe a few drinks in a pub in Victoria in London.
Well, that's right. What happened was that a number of us left school together, and we'd been very much involved in sport at Linden Lodge School. And then suddenly we found that there was virtually nothing. Someone invited us to do some football at Holland Park School. And that was really quite innovative in its day because it was an evening class. It was just an ordinary evening class that you signed up for and paid your dues for. And then we went along and played in this gym with a bench as the goal. And we had partially sighted and blind people there. And I thought, God, this is amazing. But that was it. That was all there was. There was a couple of cricket teams around, mainly from Worcester Old Boys and London Sports Club. But they really didn't, well, Sports Club didn't really cover the level of sport that we were used to as youngsters. And so four of us from Linden Lodge, plus four other friends that we'd met through the football, met in this pub in Victoria. And we said, look, you know, it's not happening for us. Rather than moan about it, rather than, you know, we tried to get elected onto committees and that didn't work. So we said, look, you know, this is silly. Rather than moan about it, let's stick a fiver in. Let's form a club. And basically, we could then suss out if anyone's got the same ideas that we want to do. And so in 1973, 23rd of April, I think it was, we sat in the pub, put the fiver in and said, OK, I think I must have gone to the toilet because I got elected chairman. Graham Salmon, who's no longer with us, sadly got elected as the treasurer. And off we went. And it was amazing. You know, within 6 months, we'd sent teams to the British Sports Association for the Disabled Games, which are just mainly for wheelchair amputees, but they started to include St Dunstan's as well as blind veterans, as is now, into their games. And they said, oh, well, there's this blind sports club. Would you like to come? And we all trotted up there and took it by storm. And then we did a trip over to Germany and tried this game called Goalball or Torball, as it was in those days. And suddenly, within 6 months or a year, we'd had a foreign trip. We'd done athletics meetings and we were playing cricket on a regular basis and the football. So suddenly we had four or five. And people then joined in droves.
And Metro was very much at the forefront of the development of sports like blind cricket, which is, you know, sort of it developed into something much bigger nowadays. I mean, back then, I suspect blind cricket was something that people didn't really sort of think that blind and partially sighted people could play.
Well, that's right. We held various demo events at Lord's and the Oval and various other cricket grounds. We managed very early on to enlist Brian Johnson, the broadcaster, as our first president. And that meant we started to get mentions on things like Test Match Special. And then Brian then had influences. So we you know, we had a game in Highgate Wood that Mike Brearley turned up to. And when we used to play Ilford Colts, there were youngsters in their team, such as Nasser Hussain and people like that. So we were playing, you know, really high level players against us, and suddenly, you know, it really kicked off. And then they held the first knockout final because we a number of us helped set up British Blind Sport, and therefore we had the first knockout cup in 1979, which of course Metro won the first one. And so the baseline was then built.
And obviously, Mike, you and Roy were very much, I think, at the beginning of Metro in many ways. And I wondered for you personally, what did it mean being a member of Metro Blind Sport? What did it give you personally, I suppose, aside from the sporting side of things?
Well, for me, I was doing a social work job and then went into management in social work. And I started to use some of the team issues that I'd learned through sport in my job. And vice versa. So some of the psychology that I used in my social work job, you started to use in your management in the sport. So there were big crossovers. But I think the biggest thing for me was this whole, I think a lot of the barriers we face are obviously ones that others put in front of us. but very often they're the barriers we put in front of ourselves. And getting something that started to push and get you to understand your abilities and not your disability was for me very, very crucial in those early days. And sport really was the vehicle to show myself that I could do things and then challenge perceptions of my family, the general public. And it gave me that competitive thing with my peers. So all four fronts, really, you know, personally, family, competitive, and then the public sort of perception. Sport really gave an inroad into all of those areas.
And was that something similar for you, Roy?
In the early sort of 70s, when I lost my eyesight, you know, again, I joined Metro not long after 73, was invited to not join only Metro, but then a steering committee for BBS. Realised that sport for me improved my confidence and my ability. And I think through having worked when I was, started work when I was 16, I had some good knowledge of administration skills. So use that really to start forming groups. We formed quite various subcommittees looking at how we can improve sports. We set up a group to do our first national, international athletics on a 400-meter track because, as Mike mentioned, BSAD only had a 60-meter concrete strip. So we thought, well, why don't we use a normal 400-meter track and put on a games in 77? And that really snowballed. Then more and more members came along. We introduced guide running. We introduced many things to which were, we were told, well, visually impaired people could not run around bends, standing long jump. We introduced running long jump. So we, again, as Mike said, we took away some of the obstacles and barriers that were being faced. And as BBS started off, we worked as very much as a partnership then to increase and more links with clubs around the country, whether it be Manchester. We linked with Leeds, we linked with, as Mike mentioned, Worcester, RNC, and St Vincent. So again, we made links with schools and colleges, and that increased more and more competition. And again, and it really enhanced the sport then to another level.
Obviously, as other things then got added, I mean, I've been writing this book about Metro, and it suddenly struck me that Graham Salmon and Peter Young, who are no longer with us, and myself, we were the first three blind competitors ever to compete in the Paralympics for UK. And that, you know, in 76 was a big, big landmark, because that led on to so many. I think there's 70 Metro members that have gone on to represent their country, which I just think is an incredible achievement for a club.
Odette, what sort of opportunities for sport were on offer to you sort of after those sort of school years and going through your life? And were you encouraged to continue with sport when you started to lose your sight?
Well, when I started to lose my sight, I was in London and I didn't know much about the VI world. And I went to Dorton College, and at Dorton College, I tried a bit of ice skating and we went swimming. But I wasn't really kind of told what there was out there for me living in London. And it's only per chance that I received an email about blind tennis that I went along and discovered Metro Blind Sport. And I think that, as I said before, I did some sport when I was younger, but it never was competitive. And I think with Metro, I really kind of discovered the world, if you want, of sport, really, of sport and competition. And I think one of the kind of biggest advantage or kind of that they gave me, it gave me a really big insight on people who were blind, visually impaired, and who were very active, who were working. And sometimes, you know, the conversations we had in the pub after playing tennis were very, very useful. I learned, for example, that you could actually apply for a support worker paid by the DWP, by the government to help you when you were at work. And I didn't know that. And nobody had told me that. And I had been working for 5 years. So I did learn a lot of sort of, if you wanted, the kind of tips and tricks and things you need to know to lead a full life as a VI person. And as a sport as well, you know, I didn't know anything about the politics and how a governing body of sport will look at disability sport. And working, Roy and myself, we were working with the LTA, the Lawn Tennis Association, to convince them to accept blind tennis as a suitable sport, you know, for as tennis. And all that journey where it was very kind of interesting, and I grew as a person and my knowledge as well of how the world works in a way. And then also the tennis girls, we went on holiday. We went together to Amsterdam, to Bath. I did some international traveling to go and compete with the tennis, went to Dublin and to Spain. And it's through Metro, really, traveling in a group, learning, you know, how do you sort of manage an airport? Where do you find assistance? How do you find the ticket office and your plane and your seat? And how do you ask for help? You know, how do you ask for assistance? And all that I have learned through Metro, through sport.
And tennis, or I think we should call it sound tennis, shouldn't we, rather than blind tennis, is one of the fastest growing VI sports. And obviously it was one of the sports that I think Metro was very much involved in bringing over to the UK from, I think, a visit from Japan. And Audette, you became one of the first visually impaired coaches. How did that sort of come about?
Well, I think it's it was just before going to Japan, actually. We were sort of thinking, I think it came about because we were feeling that we couldn't get any coaches. Nobody was really interested in coaching us. And it wasn't an official form of tennis yet. And so the Tennis Foundation wasn't really supporting us. We only had a local coach from Chim who kind of helped us because his wife was a guide dog puppy walker. So they had a kind of connection with blind people. And so, but we were really desperate to advance, to improve our tennis, to learn how to play. And we thought, well, okay, well, if we become coaches, that's me, Amanda Green and Alan Weatherly, we might have a bit more influence on the Tennis Foundation. And so we kind of approached the Tennis Foundation and said, well, we'd like to do the level one coaching. And it was the first time that a VI person had asked them. And we said, well, we won't be able to use the normal balls. We'll need to have our jingly balls with us. And they were very, very good. We were actually very surprised and very pleased on how accommodating they were with their curriculum, with all the drills we had to do on the tennis court. And actually, some were very encouraging because they were actually saying to the other students that we were actually very a gift to them, because it would sort of help them then cope, if you want, or learn how to coach disabled children or disabled future tennis players that would come along to their clubs and that they could practice with us. So that was quite fun. But they did adapt a lot of things. Even the test, I couldn't read it, so the coach would read it. Amanda and myself, we couldn't read it, but Amanda could see well enough to write. So she would write her answer, and then I would dictate my answer to the coach. So we found solutions, and I think that was the great kind of, admiration I had for the Tennis Foundation, is that together we worked together and we found solutions to make it happen.
And obviously, when we look back at Metro over the last 50 years, the organisation from those early days of that first couple of years, and maybe the first sort of 10 years, you know, it's developed. And Roy, you were the first chair of Metro for 30 years before becoming their first chief executive in 2014. And I wondered, looking back for you and Mike over that sort of 30-year period of your time as chair, what may have been the sort of highlights, maybe one highlight from each decade of chairmanship? And Roy, what sort of things do you think sort of stand out over those 3 decades of being chair?
I think it was the professionalism. It was the accepting that we wanted, as Adet said, we got a level 4 coach to come along, you know, and that made a massive difference. And we insisted on that, you know, it wasn't a have a go day anymore. This was now, we wanted professional coaches in athletics. We wanted it in tennis. We managed to fundraise and sent Adet, Amanda and Alan out to Japan to see how they coach totally blind people. That was another breakthrough we wanted to overcome. We concentrated a lot on if we could coach totally blind and nearly totally blind, early B2s in cricket. But again, we got professional help from cricket. We got the MCB involved. We got the Essex Cricket Board. We got the Surrey Cricket Board. We got them to look at it as professionally. Again, looking at at level 1 coaching, in not just in football as well as in tennis. And again, going out to Japan made a big difference. Adet's already mentioned that she went to many countries, certainly Japan, Germany a couple of times, Adet, didn't you? So again, the big breakthrough in cricket where we decided to have 2 cricket teams. Now, that was a massive breakthrough. So we had more players, but we needed to. So we thought, right, we're into 2 teams. And then obviously having the National Athletics, which is now, 45th this year. So again, it's that realising the need, talking amongst the members and the trustees, funding it and then putting it on. So we actually did the first national tennis tournament. So we actually hired in 3 indoor courts. We hired a hotel. We hired coaches, volunteers, umpires, and put on a national, and then and showed LTA and said, look, this is how it can be done. And they really bought into it and they have taken it over. So we now have internationals at European and world level. And we have, you know, 6 or 7 tournaments a year and 700 people playing. But the big breakthrough for me as well was the amount of that women came along. That was the big breakthrough. Metro started off, as Mike said, you know, football and cricket and a lot of guys playing. But once the tennis started, the women wanted to play football then and started wanting to play cricket, wanted to play. They became very, very active, very fit. And then obviously the athletics helped them. Again, we had more women. So the breakthrough was that being more active. Stop, you know, the people that were very inactive becoming active. And that made a massive breakthrough. We could pick up, as Mike said, as soon as they left school, we could pick them up, ones from university, and people joined. You know, we went from having less than 100 to over 400 members very quickly as the years have gone on with that sort of interest. And sitting on international bodies, that's the main thing. I sat on the National Paralympic Committee, Mike sat on, and just showing people the expansion, what could be done. It was that sort of, yes, find a sport and see if we could adapt it, you know, whether it be golf, again, internationally. The challenges were there for us to sort of break down and say, yes, visually impaired people can compete at whatever sport.
Mike, for you as somebody who set up Metro Blind Sport and looking back over those last 50 years, you must be so proud of the achievements of the club and the members, for members, you know, competing at international and world championships and representing Great Britain at Summer and Winter Paralympic Games.
I think so. I think for me, it's been that journey, as Roy has just been saying, that once we realised what we got from the sport, why we wanted other people to have a chance at the sport. Roy and I then got involved in setting up British Blind Sport so that we could then broaden it from just London and Metro so that others had the chance and more competitions then to compete against, like groups like Northern Sports and the Scottish Association. Rotary did an athletics meeting, but sadly they're all gone, all withered. I also helped set up Paralympics GB, and also we set up the ski club for the disabled. So a lot of the early sort of international influences, Roy and I and others were heavily involved. You've heard from the tennis, you know, a lot of that meant that we started to become massively involved. We haven't mentioned bowls, obviously another massive sport for the blind in the UK. And again, our bowlers have been in international events. Steve Simmons represented Britain at the Commonwealth Games in Australia, and therefore, you know, we've had that influence then, an impact on so many different sports. My sport of skiing, you know, we started skiing in 74. It was one of the first sports that, if you like, an international site outside our comfort zone. Got an invitation by a rehab worker who'd been the previous year and saw this wonderful event for the blind in Norway, and then said, well, you know, would we be going? Got 15 people to go, and most of whom are Metro members. Five of the all the blind skiers then that represented Britain subsequent to the 76 games were all from Metro, with people like Jimmy Denton and Kenny Bodden and etc. And so we've been pathfinders in so many different sports. I mean, Roy was involved with, you know, getting all the sort of marathon stuff sorted, and we were some of the first blind runners at the London Marathon. And then things like park runs with the guide runners, etc. So it's not just what we're doing in the Metro bit of it. Is so many of our members have gone on both international representation for themselves, but also in the organising and getting others to have those opportunities. And I just think that's a massive, massive contribution. I mean, the hackneyed statement that, you know, the power of sport to change lives, as probably the three of us have just testified, it certainly changed ours.
I think the other thing that's linked with this, we mustn't forget, is the amount of fundraising and how successful it was with sponsors wanting to be part of the journey with us. And getting sponsors mean that, you know, that people joined the club because, you know, they could afford then to go to the cricket, go to the tennis, go to the skiing. You know, we could help fund the event and subsidise the week's event. And that was a major problem, because not everybody, as you know, there's a large percentage of people with sight loss that, you know, are not working. But we had a very good link of raising money, and money came into the club. And means we could stop that sort of problem that, you know, if you can't afford it, you can't do it. We managed to overcome that.
And that was a very key element, Roy, wasn't it? At the very beginning, it was need and enjoyment, not strength of pocket,
yeah,
and who could afford it.
Absolutely.
And for us, that was really fundamental, that it wasn't, and it didn't have to be the high profile ones. It didn't have to be the, you know, ones for the razzmatazz. It could be, you know, a holiday down, you know, we did holidays down in Westward Ho, and we tried all sorts of different sports that most of us had never heard of, let alone tried. And it was just fun. You know, it didn't have to be that ultra competitive, you know, end of it. It just had to be because people wanted those challenges and a chance to do something slightly outside their comfort zone.
And I'd like to add something here as well, is that we've talked a lot about Paralympics and competition and international and all that. But it's true what you're saying, Mike, is that sport has we have to think about those who just do it for fun and for leisure, yeah, and just to be a little, yeah, bit fit, and not just competition. I mean, for example, the tennis has allowed me to go on holiday with my brother, who's fully sighted, and suddenly I can actually play tennis with him on court, and with my niece, with my husband, we ride a tandem together, and it's all for fun and to be with the family and to not be left out in a way. So we have to also say that Metro has allowed that to happen.
And you've had blind parents able to play tennis with their children or relatives, and the other way around, blind children, yeah, then being able to play tennis with their sighted parents. And that's a rarity in specialist disability sport. There aren't many ones where that's going to be easily possible.
I think the influence of Brian Johnson, though, with the charity matches that we played with the Green Room and loads of, again, people that we met, and that really spread the word, like playing the Essex Colts or, you know, games at Lord's and the Oval, that demonstration in front of full houses, demonstrating the football, that broke down all those barriers. And again, it helped with the sponsorship, with the sponsors for the Metro Games grew and grew, and we got money came in because people, you know, really saw the benefits of people taking part. And I think that friendship between you and your guide runner, you and your tandem rider, romance flowed. There was loads going on, you know, whether it be sailing, that became, you know, people part in the sailing week. The sports just rolled along. We just kept on expanding and saying, well, yeah, fine. If you want to try it out, yes, we'll support you. Here's the money to go and do it. Go and try it. You know,
and I think two of the things that I'm probably most proud of, and they were big events, was that we held the peace ride for people on tandems. We had 28 people doing tandem riding all around Essex, and they came from all the continents. I think there were 11 countries represented, and we held that. We funded it. We ran it. We got one of our keen cyclists, a visually impaired woman. She suddenly ended up masterminding the food, and she just remembers that as the biggest sort of event in her life, because she was regarded as, you know, a bit timid, a bit underperforming, and suddenly she was the matron, if you like, of the event. And I just think that peace ride in Essex was phenomenal. And the other big thing was, I don't know if any other club, I don't think any other club has ever done this, but we did the trip to South Africa to reintroduce blind cricket to vision impaired people in South Africa. After apartheid had been dismantled, we then took balls, bats and everything else and played in Johannesburg and down in Cape Town, etc., in Worcester. And suddenly, you know, we reintroduced the notion that vision impaired people in South Africa could do all these sports. And of course, the following year, they had the first World Cup of blind cricket and the South Africans won it, which I don't know whether we should claim part of the success. But I was just so proud that our little club, you know, we raised money for it. We got all the organization over there. We did the tour over there. And it was just an incredible liberation that the club had done. And that was in the mid 90s. You know, it wasn't in recent times. You know, for a club of our size to do something like that was just phenomenal.
Well, I think the two things for me then must be the athletics being the first national 400 yes. meter, using a 400 meter track, and the first tennis tournament again.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
hiring yes. that. You know, the accommodation, the organisation, getting all the professional help. Those two things as a club, you know, a small club running a national event, you know, getting organising all the transport, all the people from all over the country to come to those two events. And I think our first athletics had internationals, Mike, didn't we? Have some Norwegians, yeah. French, you know, yeah. so Swedish, you know, German. So, again, it was those links to other people. And again, which sort of forged the club ahead.
And looking to the future and maybe the next 50 years of Metro Blind Sport, what do you all see as Metro's role within sport for blind and partially sighted people, as it's probably even more important now to have a club for visually impaired people to participate in sport now and in the future? And Mike, you first.
I think it's knowing what the art of the possible is, and I think not accepting that basically nothing's impossible. I think one of the big things that Roy has carried on with and sort of pushed through was the involvement of the international bodies, of getting athletics involved in understanding athletics and being some, you know, have responsibility for it. The tennis being responsible for the tennis, and the Football Association now having a disability aspect to it. The skiing, obviously, we don't have a very powerful ski fall, but we've been very influential in the international bodies. So it's how we get that input. And unfortunately, I think also really feeding in at that international level into the BPA, into people with some sort of responsibility for vision impairment now in sport, because, you know, there are very few clubs like Metro now, and increasingly I think the onus will be on us to inform, to influence, and to innovate, the three I's. And I think they're going to be really more and more important as we go forward, and for Metro then to not rest on its laurels and to carry on those challenges.
And what do you feel, Roy?
I think the change when I was chair was between 95% of children were in visually impaired schools, specialist schools. Now 95% of the children are in mainstream. That's the challenge going forward, is giving them the opportunity, because they don't have enough children in their classroom to play some of the adapted sports. I think it's that we've got to get to teachers at that level. We've got to overcome the barrier of after-school clubs, where a lot of the opportunity, where the transport's arranged and it can't change the timings so the children can go to after-school clubs. It's one of the things I'm trying to push at the moment is children being able to swim, not being able to go to group swimming because of the, maybe they say there's a health and safety issue, but so one-to-one swimming with a coach, and which is what we're doing successfully in some of the boroughs. So allowing children to swim, to run. We've overcome the running problems with junior park run. So, but it's that after school clubs, it's that joining with their classmates and having fun. The whole thing about sport is having fun, and that means you'll go and do it again. And we just got to get the fun back into mainstream schools so the children can have fun, even if they've got sight loss.
Audette, what do you see as the future for Metro?
I think that we should ensure that kind of all coaches of all sports have a disability remit when they actually do their coaching exam, if you want. That is part of their program to learn about different disabilities. I know it's difficult because there are so many disabilities and then so many adaptations, but as coaches, that kind of should be part of what they do. I think we with the tennis, we did find at the beginning, and even now really, that finding a good coach that is interested, that is kind of you know, that is going to sort of be willing to adapt and sees it as part of their role, of their kind of mission to coach whatever sport they do, you know, to include disability coaching. And I think that then the grassroots is very important, and not just for children, but for adults. I mean, I must say for myself, you know, I became visually impaired as an adult and I didn't know what there was out there for me. And so it's making sure that classes like the courses like Living with Sight Loss, like the ECLOs and the Eye Clinic Liaison Officer in the hospitals, the low vision clinics, the rehabilitation officers, they all kind of work together and encourage people to take up sports and sort of let them know it's possible and support all the sort of clubs that are all around London and around the UK, really.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Audette, Roy and Mike, for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio to celebrate 50 golden years of Metro Blind Sport.
Thank you.
Thank you, Toby. Thank you for giving us the opportunity.
Thank you very much indeed. And come on, you out there, come and join the sporting world.